Dr. John, engineering and producing our program. It's Tuesday, December the 19th. We're in the Green Thing Zocalo Village studio. Our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Without further ado, let's go to the live line and University of Arizona President Robert Robbins with us. Dr. Robbins, how are you, sir?
I am doing well. How are you today, Bill?
Doing pretty well. Thank you for asking. Everyone by now is aware of the financial crisis at the University of Arizona. So let me just cut to the chase here. How confident are you, President Robbins, that the recovery plan that you have introduced will erase this $240 million budget shortfall?
Yeah, Bill, I'm very confident. First of all, it's not $240 million budget shortfall. It's much less than that. That was the estimated amount of cash we would have on hand versus what we have. So the actual deficit in the budget is much smaller, and I'm very confident that we have plans in place. We spent the whole month of November and now well into December working on a plan that will get us out of this. There are three main areas. We have invested a lot into our students, and I'm very proud of the class that has come to the University of Arizona for the last 6.5 years, particularly in the last couple of years. They just keep getting more qualified, more diverse, and we're very proud of the class that we've recruited. They are retaining at a higher rate and graduating at a higher rate. A lot of the strategic investments we made in students have worked. We overshot that a bit in terms of giving merit financial aid to out-of-state students. So we're going to adjust that. It's going to take us a little while to come back and get that number more in line with our peers in terms of providing financial aid. The other thing is we had some overallocation of projected revenues across the university, and we'll address those. But I'm very confident that that we will be able to in a very short time start to stop the deficit spending and move the university forward. It'll probably take us, because of the delay in realizing the full revenue from our out-of-state students, which has always been a big part of supporting the university, because we've already committed to those students that are coming in. And the good news is we've got a lot of interest from out-of-state students, but we're just going to have to reduce some of the very generous merit aid awards we've given. And then, of course, there's athletics. That's long been a problem for since COVID, in terms of the amount of money that the university has had to loan to the athletics department. And we're working on a plan with Dave Hickey and our business affairs team to increase revenue and cut costs that we have in athletics. But, you know, Bill, as we've talked many times, this is something that is being seen by athletic departments across the country, but we definitely have to get a handle on it. So those are the big three areas where I think we can aggressively attack and get us back into a good financial position.
You know, when you look across the country, UA has become really the latest school dealing with a sizable budget problem. In recent months, public and private colleges and universities across the country have announced mass layoffs and program eliminations. What about layoffs, program eliminations at the University of Arizona, Dr. Robbins?
Well, Bill, I think, you know, places like University of Nebraska, West Virginia University, the problem that they've had is a decrease in student enrollment. That's not our problem. We've seen records through COVID because we kept the university open, 2%, 3%, 4%, as much as high as 8% interest from students growth year over year. in the University of Arizona. So University of Arizona is a very popular place for students to come. And I think of all the great programs that we have, and certainly athletics is always a great marketing tool to attract students to any university. But it's really the professors, the staff, the programs that we offer. And we're truly world leaders in many of these areas, like astronomy and hydrology, and optical sciences, the health sciences, and things like that. So I would be really concerned if we had seen a real drop like West Virginia and Nebraska, because they projected at least stable or growth, and they've seen drastic reductions. So we're not planning on any kind of major cuts in that area. We are going to implement a hiring freeze, and we're going to cut back on some international travel for administrators. We're going to look at our building projects, any kind of faculty, staff increases in pay that we may have been projecting out in fiscal 25. We're going to hold those. So I think that we'll be able to weather this. And once we get that tuition revenue back to where we need it to be, then I think we'll be fine. We certainly don't have the problems that West Virginia, Nebraska, and others have had with decreasing student enrollment. People want to be at the University of Arizona.
And oversight will change in the future after, actually right away, oversight looking at the budget.
Right.
Is that correct?
Yeah. Right. So we've for years have run a formulaic allocation of resources through our budgeting system, and we're going to move that to a centralized budget allocation system and put in controls so that we have early warnings about any over expenditures based on the revenue that we're getting. You know, we get a big tranche of money in the fall, 3 weeks after we start school. We have what's called Census Day, where we get a massive bolus of student tuition dollars that come in. And then again, after the holidays in the first 3 weeks of January, we get another bolus of tuition for the spring semester. So we've just got to do a better job of putting those centralized monitoring controls in so that we assure that we're not overspending as related to the budget that we've allocated, and really allocate budget based on real numbers of what the revenue is that we've taken in.
Campus safety has become a huge concern, a big story at the University of Arizona. Are you assured that you're moving in the right direction there, Dr. Robbins?
Yeah, we have a new police chief, Chris Olson, who came and has served as our interim police chief, and he was just named our permanent police chief. He comes from Oro Valley, where there's a lot of good experience that he was able to garner from that experience, and he's a great fit for our campus. And then Steve Patterson oversees all of our Office of Public Safety, and I am very, very confident in both Steve and Chris Olson's Chief Olson's attacking this problem. We're aware of it, and I think through the great cooperation of University of Arizona Police Department, Tucson Police Department, Pima County Sheriff, and other agencies regionally, that we will find this individual who has been harassing our students. And I hope there's an arrest soon, but I feel confident that that we'll get to the bottom of this.
I've only got a little over a minute left. The financial story has kind of overshadowed some of the accomplishments of 2023, hasn't it?
Really has. I mean, you know, I just saw another new picture from the James Webb Space Telescope, and it's just phenomenal pictures, and just remind people that our astronomy department is the best in the world, and much of the instruments that many of the instruments that are on the James Webb telescope are come from the University of Arizona, and our great professors there. Marcia Rieke is one who's just been, she's internationally renowned, and a lot of her instruments are on that telescope. Then, of course, the completion of the OSIRIS-REx project. They're now, Dante Loretta and his team are analyzing the asteroid material that was returned. So those things are just incredibly important, and the Mirror Lab is building the mirrors for the Giant Magellan Telescope that'll be sighted hopefully within the next several years. So there's a lot to be proud of. The hydrology department, optical sciences, our health sciences are tremendous. We've got a new initiative called CAMI, the Center for Advanced Molecular and Immunological Therapies, that will be opening soon. So there's a lot to be proud of at the University of Arizona. And I think, Bill, that's why students want to come here. And then, of course, we've had tremendous success with athletics, with Coach Fish getting to number 14 rating, going to the Alamo Bowl. I think if he beats Oklahoma, then, he probably is looking at a top 10 finish. And then Coach Lloyd and Coach Barnes and their teams are doing quite well. I was disappointed that we lost to Purdue in Indianapolis. Got another tough one in Phoenix tomorrow with Alabama, but I'm really confident in Coach Lloyd and his staff and their players that they're going to rebound, and I hope to see them hand the Crimson Tide a loss right here in Arizona.
All right. UA President Dr. Robert Robbins, want to wish you and yours a very happy holiday season, Dr. Robbins.
Bill, thank you as always for your time, and I hope you have a blessed and joyous holiday season.
Thank you very much. All right, Dr. Robert Yes, sir. Robbins with us on the Buckmaster Show. Steve and the team up at Mona's Danish Bakery are ready for your Christmas order for your holiday table. How about a great pie for your Christmas dinner from Mona's Danish Bakery, located at the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise, and they are the home of the Danish Kringle. Kringle sounds like a Christmas dessert for me, so it's very appropriate for Mona's. Their website's monasdanishbakery.com. Shelly Fishman is up next. Shell's given me a very enthusiastic thumbs up. We'll hear what's going on with the markets right after this. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is working with the Citizens Advisory Committee to prepare and present a new draft plan to the RTA board by December. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Thinking about a river cruise? Let Bon Voyage Travel guide you to choose the perfect cruise to complement your vacation dreams. River cruising has become more popular than ever, and we know you have so many options to consider when selecting the destination, cruise line, and ship. At Bon Voyage Travel, we provide a comprehensive presentation on the top tips for river cruises and have a team of specialists to assist you. Visit bvtravel.com and view our River Cruise 101 presentation today.
Shelley Fishman is a financial consultant in private practice in Tucson, Arizona. The views expressed during this segment are his own and don't necessarily represent those of this station or of Bill Buckmaster Communications. Contact Shelley through buckmastershow.com or at shelleyfishman.com.
And Shelley Fishman with us in studio. This is our year-end forecast time, Shelley, because we're going to take Boxing Day off. That is the day after Christmas. A week from today, it'd be the day after Christmas. And
I get a day off.
Yeah,
yay!
You get a day off. So this is the last Shelley Fishman report for 2023. So we've got a lot of ground to cover. Why don't we begin with what kind of year was it? Basic question.
Well, it was an unexpectedly very, very good year. And in fact, there, if anybody wants to read a kind of a detailed analysis of what happened and why it's so unusual, there's a great article in the Washington Post by Rachel Stegall and Jeff Stein called "Everyone Expected a Recession, the Fed and White House Found a Way Out." And it's kind of in the weeds, but it's a good summary of what happened during the year and why everybody was wrong.
And everybody has been wrong. And, you know, they have negotiated or they've pulled off the Fed what many had said was going to be just almost impossible. We've heard this soft landing, and I guess we got pretty close to it, didn't we?
Well, we got very close to it.
And that's,
they don't declare a soft landing until they get to 2% inflation.
But we're headed in the right direction,
we sure
right?
Are. Let me give you just an idea of where we are, just some quick, kind of down in the dirt kind of numbers. Inflation is down to 3.5%. And that's the way we'll end the year. GDP growth will come in at about 3% for this year, which is absolutely astonishing. We haven't had a 3% year since the Clinton presidency.
Wow.
Unemployment is down between 3.5% and 3.7%, and that is full employment. And again, we haven't had a below 4% year in like forever.
Mm-hmm.
Markets are up a lot, not just a little bit. Just to give you an example, year to date, the Dow, and this is as of 9 o'clock this morning, it turns out we're just about where we were then. 13% on the Dow, 24.5% on the S&P 500,
24.5%,
and 43% or more on the Nasdaq.
Boy, the Nasdaq, that's almost, I don't know, that sounds like it could be a record, but I have no idea.
It is very close to record. All of these closes for the year will be at or near all-time highs.
Wow.
In the beginning of the year, we had some peaks, and so people were wondering, are we going to be able to reach those numbers again? And we pretty much have. So what we're seeing in the markets, even if I take a look at the 3 years in this administration, those numbers are down a little bit from the previous presidencies, but that's because we had, a pandemic and a huge problem. But we solved that problem without going into a recession and without increasing unemployment. So the suffering that people had through, some inflation was very real and very painful, but it's a lot better than, having 8 or 9% unemployment, which is what all of the expert economists were saying there would be. For For next year, I'll give you some numbers. Please hold me to these.
Okay.
Looking at my crystal ball, I believe inflation will come in not quite where the Fed would like it to be for next year, somewhere between 2.5% and 3%.
Okay.
GDP growth of 3%, again, very, very unusual. We haven't seen that since the Clinton presidency. But if the trending for the third quarter and what we're going to see in the fourth quarter of 23 continues into the year and we don't get any unknown unknowns, we could have a 3% year. Unemployment around 4%. Markets will be up a bit. This year they were up a lot. Next year they should be up a bit. Election years are always funny when it comes to market reactions, and we really won't know until we see the final tickets and what's going on there. And job creation, this has been an astonishing administration. Normal job creation is between 180 and 200,000 jobs a month. We have had, in the past 3 years, an average of about 500,000 jobs a month. This year, we've created between 5 and 6 million new jobs. And it's just an astonishing number. Now, I will grant you that the pandemic caused the job market to be very volatile, and a lot of people kind of took early retirement, if you will, or kind of dropped out and then are coming back in. But we've exceeded the pre-pandemic numbers now, and we're still seeing very large numbers. I believe that we'll see next year not the 2 to 3 million that you would expect, but maybe 3 to 4 million new jobs in 2024. The things driving the economy next year are really interesting. When I kind of wrote them down, the tailwinds, the things that the economy is going to enjoy, are interest rates coming down. And Jay Powell said that he anticipates as many as 3 interest rate cuts next year. That gives companies more money to spend because they can borrow more. So that's a tailwind for the economy. Consumer and corporate spending is already very near record highs. That should continue. And the employment picture is also very, very optimistic for next year. Those three tailwinds, those are the probably the most forceful supporters of the economy. Those are all data-driven. In other words, we will know what those numbers are. There's nothing about those numbers that is squishy. The headwinds are the public fear of a recession. Recessions are very often caused by people fearing that it's going to happen. What's remaining of inflation, people somehow think, and because we haven't had inflation in such a long period of time, people believe that prices have to come down to where they were before. That ain't going to happen.
Yeah.
Some prices will come down, but a little, you know, where the prices are today is going to flatten out, and that's the new price level that we measure from. And income inequality is always a problem because it makes it difficult for people to believe that they can succeed. And so all of the headwinds for next year are sentiment problems. They're soft, squishy things, things that people kind of believe might happen, and that drives economic performance. So when I take a look at the hard data numbers, which are the tailwinds, and the squishy numbers, the sentiment-driven numbers, which are the headwinds, you know, I'd like to believe the optimist in me says that hard data will win out over sentiment that's very often being driven by, you know, political
perception.
Perceptions, but they're driven.
And the people, there are still so many people that are saying it's the Biden economy has been horrible, and this is like things are horrible.
Bill, we have seen now for the last 2 years that increases in non-supervisory salaries have outpaced inflation by more than a percent. And now I get it. I get it that inflation is troubling and
the perception,
you see it every day. But increases in wages, and that doesn't count the stimulus. You know, people got, what was it, $1,600, $1,700 checks. So when I take a look at what's unknown, the things that make me less comfortable that my crystal ball is as accurate as I would like it to be, we've got two wars going on. And that is upsetting world markets. And we don't know how those wars are going to come out, or if they will end anytime soon. Climate disasters are very, very costly for the economy. You know, forget about long-term climate problems. What we're seeing now every month, every week during the season is climate disasters that are very, very costly. Mm-hmm. Hurricanes, fires, etc. They're also affecting our ability to plant and have our agriculture very successful. So those things are problematic. And the other thing that, of course, you know, you can't ignore next year is the election.
Yes.
During election years, the markets react in very kind of crazy ways. Very often they will kind of stagnate during the first and second quarter. And then when a winner looks like it's going to happen, the third quarter and the fourth quarter will be wonderful. Mm-hmm. So, you know, those are the unknowns for next year. But I think we're going to have an okay year, probably maybe better than okay. I don't see anything on the horizon that dampens my enthusiasm, except the stuff that you can't control.
Yeah.
That isn't policy-oriented. It's just people's feelings.
All right. Well, it will be hard to top this year, the way the indices have been reacting. Shelley Fishman, I hope you and yours have a wonderful holiday season. We will see you 2 weeks from today in the new year in 2024.
And to you, Bill, have a great holiday.
Thank you very much.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
I've known the Chavez family for 35 years, and thanks to Chavez in 67, you won't find any soft, saggy cushions at the Buckmaster Bungalow. Chavez in 67 can restuff your cushions with new, firm, high-density foam. What a difference that makes. They also offer full upholstery services. Give them a call at 520-795-8032 or check out the website chavezin67.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show and the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studios. Still time to get your holiday greenery over at Green Things. Those poinsettias, so beautiful. I now have three of them at the Buckmaster Bungalow, and they're doing very well. And Jan and Jack, the owners, told me to water them every other day, keep them moist, and they are looking lovely as I transition into this holiday week. So check out Green Things for all your holiday needs, 3384 East River Road by the Rito River. And their part of the business called Zocalo Village has some very beautiful items from Mexico for the holidays, including the tin Christmas trees. Put a light in the middle, and it looks just very beautiful. But they, Jan and Jack, always buy some beautiful things and have them brought back to us here in Tucson from Mexico. All right, our live line when we do our telephone interviews presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. We will not be doing a telephone interview for the next two segments. We will be in studio with our quarterly segment. I'm calling it, What Are You Reading These Days? With Bruce and Greg, writer, journalist, editor, photographer, and publisher. Gregory McNamee is the author of 8 books, including Tortillas, Tiswin and T-Bones, A Food History of the Southwest. His other book, Gila, The Life and Death of an American River. Gila, a beautiful area over near Silver City, where we have a wonderful sponsorship from our friends in Silver City and Grant County. Mr. McNamee is the editor of Zocalo, an arts and cultural magazine covering Tucson and southern Arizona. He's the operator of Sonora Word Works. I want to say Wood Works, Greg, but no, it's an editorial and publishing service. Bruce Dingus is with us. Bruce retired from the Arizona Historical Society, where he was editor of the Journal of Arizona History. He also was a judge of the Southwest Books of the Year competition for more than 3 decades. And Greg, you're still a judge. Are you still not a judge for the Southwest Books of the Year?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Yeah. How many years has that been?
Maybe 6 or 7 now, something like that.
I know Bruce was there. You're a newbie compared to what Bruce did. Okay, gentlemen, very great to see you as usual. And your quarterly edition this time will give some folks, I hope, maybe some holiday suggestions for reading. Bruce, let's begin with you. What do you have on your winter picks this
year? I'm going to start off with Ned Blackhawk, The Rediscovery of America, Native Peoples and the Unmaking of U.S. History. This is the National Book Award winner in nonfiction. Blackhawk, a Yale University history professor and enrolled member of the Western Shoshone tribe, makes the argument that it's impossible to understand the United States without understanding its indigenous history. Drawing on a rich body of current scholarship supported by engaging anecdotes, he refocuses centuries of Anglo-centric bias in literature and popular culture to portray Native peoples as active agents, the agents of their own destinies, who often made a decisive impact on American law, commerce, and society. Writing American history without American Indians, Blackhawk argues, is like a one-handed clap. Blackhawk gives writers ample cause to applaud his transformative reordering of how we view our nation's past and the long road back to self-determination for Native peoples.
This is an interesting book because I read a couple of reviews about this. Blackhawk argues that as you point out, that the Native people often were active agents of their own destinies.
Yeah.
Which is kind of a narrative that we don't usually get.
And they shaped Anglo history in ways that we just don't perceive offhand.
All right, Greg, what's up first for you? A very familiar name to fans of Jim Harrison.
Yeah, Jim Harrison, sometime Tucsonan or Patagonian or Southern Arizona in any way. His book, The Search for the Genuine, is out in paperback now. If you're a fan of good writing, then you know already the work of Jim Harrison, I hope. The author of novels such as Legends of the Fall and Dalva and Wolf. Less well-known are his books of poems, although he was a fantastic poet. All of those you can hunt up. Less well-known than those are his essays, which hitherto were pretty scattered across all kinds of magazines over the years, chronicling a long life of definite misbehavior, along with fishing and reading and driving the blue highways.
A little bit of alcohol poured
just a touch
into the mix,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, and in fact, well, he says, I excel at taking naps, pouring drinks, lighting my cigarettes, writing too many novels, and some say cooking. And true enough, all of those things. I have participated in all of those things with Jim, except writing novels. he had many other loves, good whiskey, hunting dogs, good shotguns, good company, hanging out in France, eating way too much. Wonderful memory of his of eating a 50-course meal in France.
50 courses.
50 courses, if you
oh
can believe that.
Oh, my goodness.
But one of the great pieces that he wrote is about a night spent just about freezing to death in the company of another sometime Tucsonan, Doug Peacock. Doug Peacock, that is. By all rights, the two should have frozen to death, but they had the antifreeze of several bottles of good Bordeaux that they had packed in and managed to stay alive. Harrison writes with wonderful humor. He's standing in the middle of the Brooklyn Bridge, and he says, I could live here, though for reasons of claustrophobia, it would have to be a one-room cabin in the middle of the bridge. Last time I was on the show, Bill, I think I mentioned that last summer I took a memorial drive along the Niobrara River in Nebraska in Jim's honor. And I think if you read this wonderful book, The Search for the Genuine, then you'll want to jump in a car and go someplace wonderful, too.
I've read many of his pieces over the years, as you point out, in a variety of magazines like GQ. So this is kind of a looks at sort of pulls together a lot of that,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, sort of a greatest hits.
Greatest hits of Jim Harrison. Jim is how old?
He is past birthdays now, but he would have been, if he were around now, he'd be maybe 82, something like that.
He would be 82.
Yeah, I believe he was, 76 when he died?
76 when he passed.
I'm just guessing.
Yeah. Right? All right.
And, yeah.
All right, Bruce Dingus,
yeah.
What's up for you?
Okay, it's a novel, Andre Dubuis III, Some Kindness. When we meet Tom Lowe, he's a beaten man, a talented artisan and devoted family man, injured in an accident and now living in subsidized housing, addicted to painkillers, and concocting a scheme to commit petty fraud. And yet deep down he knows he's just not that kind of guy. The question at the heart of this novel is, can he find meaning and purpose in a world that seems stacked against him? Dubuis is just an absolute master of detail and interior dialogue. And he's also one of America's most empathetic writers. As readers, we come to know Tom Lowe and we root for him even in his darkest moments. Each reader will have to decide for him or herself if there's a happy ending to this book. It's a credit to Dubois's considerable literary chops that he actually redefines what constitutes happiness. This is a perfect book for a book club read.
And the title again, Some Kindness. By Andre
Dubuis the third.
The third. All right. Let's see if we can work one more in before we take the break. Christopher Hitchens is your next winter pick for Greg McNamee.
Yeah, a hitch in time. So the 2024 elections are fast upon us, as you know, from all the barrage of noisy political ads that are starting up on radio and TV. And there's one person that I wish were still alive to have the spectacle in front of him and to interpret it for us, and that's Christopher Hitchens, late great British journalist who moved here in the 1970s, became an American, as proud and patriotic an American as there was, progressive in some ways, conservative in others, always with a like his hero Edmund Burke, always with a jaundiced eye on what you might call the received wisdom. He said, for example, the Romans had a maxim that if you wish peace, you must prepare for war. Oddly enough, even strict observances of this rule is not always enough to guarantee peace. But if you happen to want a war, preparing for it is a good way.
Yes.
This is a collection of essays, again, scattered over mostly the London Review of Books, A Hitchin Time. Hitchens has been dead since 2011, but I think he lives on. One of the wonderful things that these essays tell us is stop whining. We have it very good in America. Stop whining about everything. Pay your taxes. Support your local school board. Do all those things. Support the local PTA. It's a perfect book for the person in the family who demands honesty and truth-telling and is sick of the way things are now. And that's in sort of short supply. And you'll need to observe the old English custom of the 12 days of Christmas, because this book doesn't drop until January the 2nd.
Way to start the new year.
Yeah, absolutely.
Christopher Hitchens, Hitch in Time is the name of that work coming out the second day of 2024. Okay, we'll take a break right here, and we will be back. And What Are You Reading These Days with Greg and Bruce continues right after this.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The Regional Transportation Authority Plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA is collected throughout Pima County and averages more than $100 million in revenue each month. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation improvements in the region. The RTA is preparing a new 20-year plan for public review. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com. The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios, Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Make a great getaway. World-famous cliff-dwelling monument is National Monument is over there. Of course, the Gila National Wilderness, only about a three-hour drive from Tucson. Visit southwestnewmexico.org, and you will be tempted by all the many outdoor activities and some great places to stay and New Mexican cuisine, too. Greg McNamee with us, who wrote the book about Gila and the Gila River. They've got some, like, old-timey Mexican restaurants that have been there, like, for decades that are a lot of fun in downtown Silver City. Do you recall that?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. There are a number of, if I named one, I would have to name all of them.
But there's some good eating.
Absolutely.
Let's put it that way.
Yeah, and you want to stay in one of the old hotels right on the main drag.
They fixed up some really nice ones down there on the main drag over in Silver City. What are you reading these days? Our quarterly segment with our literary guys, Greg and Bruce, Greg McNamee and Bruce Dingus. We're kind of nailing down about four picks each for winter reads and maybe some suggestions if you haven't picked the reader, the literary person in your family. How about a book? It's always a great gift. Bruce, let's put you on the spot here for your third pick, and it has to do with, I think the title's True West.
That's right. It's Betsy Gaines Quayman, and it's True West, Myth and Mending on the Far Side of America. And just peripherally, Betsy will be at the Tucson Festival of Books this spring with her husband, the nature writer David Quayman. And in this book, Betsy explores the Western myths that form our national ethos, boundless expansionism, rugged individualism, endless abundance, and unbridled liberty. And her goal is to understand the ways in which they've become toxic in our present-day political discourse in the hope that it might lower the temperature of honest debate. And for the most part, she succeeds. With an advanced degree in environmental history, Quayman exhibits a sadly rare talent for separating the person from their political beliefs. And that's where she discovers fertile middle ground. In interview after interview with a host of Westerners across the political spectrum, she demonstrates, without ever being Pollyannish, that with patience and understanding, good people of opposing viewpoints can still come together over a cold glass of iced tea. She leaves us with the hope that the center may yet hold.
Boy, got my fingers crossed for that.
We all.
I'll tell you, that's True West, Myth and Mending on the Far Side of America. All right, Greg McNamee, what do we have for number three from you?
Well, I'm going to go a little bit lighter now, and that is over to P.G. Woodhouse, W-O-D-E House, Woodhouse. For many, many years, I read the entire Lord of the Rings trilogy at Christmas time because I had some time off, and it just became a tradition. And then the movies came along, and I gave myself a pass. I thought, well, you know, I don't have to read those books anymore. I can read something else while I'm watching the movies. And I always managed to come down with a cold at the holidays, it seems. And so to honor tradition and to make myself feel better during those colds, I turned to P.G. Woodhouse and his stories of Bertie Wooster and Jeeves the Butler. If you've seen the adaptation on PBS with Hugh Laurie as Bertie and Stephen Fry as Jeeves, you'll know the formula. It's 1920s England. Bertie's this dim-witted member of the lesser aristocracy who thinks he's much smarter than he really is. And you know, when you get that kind of formula, you've got trouble brewing. It's a guarantee for disaster. He finds disaster after disaster after disaster, usually courtesy of his Aunt Agatha, who doesn't mind using Bertie as a sacrificial lamb for all kinds of schemes of hers. More often than not, though, it's because a pretty young woman has turned Bertie's head and has put him up to some mischief, like stealing a silver cow that they pour milk out of. I'm sure there's a name for that, you know, the milk dispenser. But or in Bertie's case, tea that you would pour the milk into. It's always Bertie's butler, Jeeves, who saves the day. He's smart and he's unflappable, and he is not afraid at all of Aunt Agatha. So I recommend you try the collection, The Most of P.G. Woodhouse, for a great sampler, guaranteed to cure the holiday blues and the common cold alike.
Sounds fun. Let's see if we can telescope these final picks from each of you, because we're down to like the maybe 4 minutes left. Bruce Dingus, close out with what you've got.
Okay, I'll close out with Elizabeth Warren, Longstreet, the Confederate general who divide the South. Excuse me. I'm by training a Civil War historian, and I'm a little bit surprised to see this getting some national acclaim, and I would say deservedly so. This biography reminds me of a conversation I had long ago with the writer James Lee Burke, who is himself a bit of a history buff and whose ancestors fought for the Confederacy. Burke was intrigued by James Longstreet, who commanded the right wing of Robert E. Lee's Army of Northern Virginia at the Battle of Gettysburg, where Longstreet argued against launching General George Pickett's disastrous charge against the center of the Union line.
If only.
Yes. It could have changed the whole.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
But thereafter, he was forever vilified by proponents of the lost cause. And it didn't help matters that he turned Republican after the war and preached reconciliation and supported, if not exactly championed, the citizen rights of former slaves. Warren, a history professor at the University of Virginia, provides a compelling portrait of a complex and endlessly fascinating American who fought to the bitter end for one of history's worst causes, and in defeat battled with equal conviction to forge a better, more inclusive version of the nation he helped tear apart. Just a great book.
Yeah,
great
it's
read.
Getting great reviews as well. Longstreet, the Confederate general who defied the South. Greg, let's see if we can quickly go with your final pick.
Yeah, my final pick is a book by Benjamin Moser called The Upside Down World. When I was a kid, I spent a lot of time in Holland. I love Holland. It's a strange country and a little inexplicable. And Ben Moser found that when he fell in love with a Dutch writer and followed him to Holland. And he's lived there for the last 20 years. And he wondered how you explain the Dutch. They live in one of the most crowded countries on the planet and yet always seem to have privacy. They speak 10 languages apiece, but they love their own language, which is this sort of sounds like you're clearing your throat all the time. They travel all over the world, but they say Holland is the best place there is to be. Ben Moser decided to explore what it means to be Dutch by writing about it through the history of the Dutch masters, you know,
that's
the painters of the Renaissance.
My favorite, and in the whole genre of art history, that's my favorite area.
Yeah, yep. You know, Jan Eyck and Frans Hals and Jan Vermeer and Rembrandt.
Yeah,
and
how many Vermeers are there in the world? Maybe like 2 dozen? Yeah,
not
that's
many.
It. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a great Vermeer museum in Delft. I went there. I got caught up at the museum and never got to the pottery family.
Yeah. It's like even in the smaller communities in Holland, there's these fabulous art museums.
It's absolutely right. Well, the book, The Upside Down World, Meeting with the Dutch Masters, it is a great start to learning how to appreciate a country through its art.
I got to pick this book up.
Yeah, it's the perfect
Benjamin
book for the art lover in the
Moser,
family.
Moser is the author.
Uh-huh.
And again, the title?
It is called The Upside Down World. When I interviewed him a few months ago, he said, it's not called The Golden Age for nothing. Uh-huh. So, yeah, it's a wonderful book.
And The Golden Age, some of that was about tulip mania.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, folks were betting on, oh, my goodness, this tulip's going to make me a lot of money, and then the bottom fell off.
Bitcoin of the 17th century.
Yeah.
But
with those wonderful tulip fields around Delft.
Yeah, a lot of people did make a ton of money on the whole tulip market.
Well, there's your next career there, Bruce.
Bruce Dingus, Greg McNamee, thank you very much. Guys, I hope both of you have a lovely holiday season, and we will see you in probably March as we plow into the next quarter and spring. Hopefully 2024 will be a good year for all of us.
Hopefully.
All Amen. Right. Thank you, Bill.
On
thank
behalf
you,
of
Happy
Greg,
New Year.
Same to you. On behalf of Greg and Bruce and John, engineering and producing our program on the other side of the glass, I'm Bill Buckmaster, wishing everyone well.